Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Purdy Insurance. Visit Purdy Insurance on Market Street in Sunbury or visit online at purdyinsurance.com. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Third down, they need eight. Just inside the 40 to keep the drive alive. And Sorling takes it back. Play action. Long and deep, far side. He goes to Hamilton. 10. Inside the 10, cuts to the 5. Touchdown, Penn State. A fabulous throw by Trace McSorling. Gaskin to the right of Browning on 3rd and 11, their own 19-yard line. 7-0 Penn State, 7:34 to go first quarter. Browning back, feels the pressure, hit and spins away, and down he goes! Back on the 12-yard line, Tyrell Chavis. Barkley in motion now, sets up to the right of McSorley. 3rd and goal at the 2. McSorley, Barkley left side, into the end zone, touchdown Penn State! Washington shows blitz, they bring it. Back goes McSorley. It's picked up. Long and deep far side. Tompkins adjusts at the 5. Reaches up. He's got it. He's there and down at the 1-yard line. First and goal, Penn State. Sanders to the left of McSorley. Wing right, Kosicki trips near side. Johnson, Tompkins, and Polk. McSorley gives it to Sanders. Touchdown, Penn State. And the Nittany Lions answer the Washington touchdown to go up 2 scores again. Barkley to the right of McSorley. 2nd and 9, their own 8-yard line. Takes it. It's going to be Barkley. 10, 15, far side 20, 25, 30, to the 40, 50. Goodbye. He is gone. Saquon Barkley, 92 yards. He ties a Penn State record for the longest run in the history of the program, tying Bill Belton, who did it against Indiana, and obviously the longest run in Penn State bowl history. Four-man front, Buckholz, Givens, Curtis Cothran. Back goes Browning.
Oh, he's...
Pressure, hit at the 5 by Givens, and down he goes at the 5-yard line. Third down, 4, Penn State, Washington, 24. Barkley will set up to the right of McSorley, far side as we see it. On that far hash. They show blitz, they bring it. Back, sets, delivers, near corner, Hamilton reaches up in the end zone. He's got it, touchdown, Penn State, and the Nittany Lions answer right back. What a job of picking up the blitz by the Penn State offensive line. Browning in the gun, looks far side, steps up, trouble, steps away, gets away again, dragged down at the 25-yard line, Sharif Miller, and it's a 3-and-out for the Nittany Lion defense. Sorley takes it, back. Waits, pressure, steps away. Now looks, throws, Barkley 30-yard line. Barkley hurdles for a first down inside the 25-yard line. Now that is a first down with style. They bring 4, rolls away from it. Looks, he's got Johnson, 35, first down to the 40-yard line. Jawan Johnson. And Penn State moves the chains with 5:17 to go. Near hash going left to right. Play clock rolls to 8.
I like Hamilton right here.
Back goes McSorley. Pressure. Steps up. Throws. Hamilton inside the 35. First down. 31. Great call. Check him. Simmons goes out. Matos is in. Three-man front with Kabinda as a spy. 2 near side. 1 far side. 4th and 10. Back goes Browning. Steps up in the pocket. Delivers over the middle. Caught 40-yard line. They lateral to Pettis. Pettis far side to the 50. Throws it back. Picked off by Brandon Smith at the 46-yard line. And the Nittany Lion football team is going to win the Fiesta Bowl. 5 seconds to go. They need to take a knee. Victory formation for the Nittany Lion football team on the verge of their 15th New Year's 6 win. Trace McSorley.
This guy's going to be the happiest guy taking this one knee with 5 seconds left to go.
Connor McGovern over it. Snaps it. Trace McSorley. Right knee goes down. The Nittany Lion football team. Fiesta Bowl champions as they beat Washington 35-28.
I want to thank the best fans in all of college football. I've never seen 20,000 people in white pants after Labor Day look so good. I want to thank that everybody that's been a part of this, President Barron, Sandy Barber, our athletic director, our lettermen, all the fans that traveled with us, but most importantly, a group of players that have never given up, that have fought and overcome all types of adversity. And I want to thank these seniors that will be remembered in Penn State history. Thank you.
Well, Saturday was fun. It took up most of the opening part of the show. That's because there were a lot of highlights. I think Dick Girardi texted me after the game, and he said, that is the most lopsided seven-point victory I've ever watched in my life. And it was. I mean, to be honest with you, I mean, you look back at the game. I mean, you know, you can't turn the ball over, and that's what hurt Penn State. I mean, McSorley was throwing the one ball away, and Murphy made a great pick in the back of the end zone, the one over the middle where they're driving, for goodness sakes. it hit a hand and it flew up in the air. As soon as it flew up in the air, I'm like, okay, that's bad. I mean, and then what happened on the Brendan Mann movement at the end, on the fourth and inches, Washington had been barking out signals all day, and the Penn State coaching staff kept complaining to the officials about it, same way Pitt did 2 years ago out at Heinz Field, and Penn State kept complaining about it and complaining about it. They finally got Penn State to move by doing that. That's how that play happened. But really, defensively, I mean, Gaskin had the one long play. They used a trick play to get in a position for another score, and they had one long drive. That was it. Penn State moved up and down the field 500-plus yards. And I said in the post game, and I'll reiterate it here, that what we saw during that 3.5 to 4 hours was past, present, and future. The past starting with James Franklin stepping in and recruiting and bringing in the likes of Grant Haley, Marcus Allen. Now, Trace McSorley was in that original group too, if you recall. He redshirted his first year. Monty Oruwariye, guys like that. Troy Apke, Mike Gesicki, Saeed Blacknall. You can go on and on with the list of guys that came in that very first recruiting class. You then saw the present, winning 11 games in each of the last 2 years. A mixture of players from veterans to young players making plays. A team and a program that has won 20 of its last 23 games. And when you look at winning 20 of your last 23, think about who they've beaten in the 20. Ohio State, Michigan, Michigan State, two against Iowa, Northwestern, Wisconsin, and Washington. That's 8 of the 20 wins. That's 8 of the 20 wins. Now, if some fan wants to add in Pitt being in that, you can do that too if you wish. But that's what they've done, and that's the present. And then showcasing the future. The future showcased in that game, Juwan Johnson, Miles Sanders, Will Fries, Ryan Bates, Stephen Gonzalez, Connor McGovern. It showcased Kevin Givens, Shane Simmons, Sharif Miller, who's going to be back, Ryan Buchholz, Cam Brown, Koa Farmer, Amani Oruwariye, Nick Scott, Aaron Monroe, Tariq Castro-Fields, Lamont Wade, Zach McPherson, Blake Gilligan, to then go with what they did nearly 2 weeks ago, 13 days ago, with the recruiting class they brought in to add into this. Young man like Shorter, Dotson, Micah Parsons, you know, and others that they are very high on that they think can be contributors for them. Some will redshirt, obviously, and some will have an opportunity to play right away. But we saw in the last 2 weeks, past, present, and future of Penn State football, and I would think that most of you would have to sit back and say, you like what you're seeing, and I think you're excited about what you're about to see. Long road to get there. It was another important step for them moving forward, but you've got to be able to look at the journey to get here, back-to-back 7-6 seasons, when they had 65 and 75 scholarships respectively and never fell below 500. Never did. Back-to-back New Year's Six bowl games. Right? Back-to-back. They haven't done that since 85, 86, back-to-back. Now, if they can somehow have another really good season next year and do it a third time, they haven't gone back-to-back-to-back since 80, 81, and 82. Two Fiestas and a Sugar. And so, I mean, they're doing some really special things here. And they're also doing it in the confines of a conference that has great depth. I mean, the Big Ten had really good matchups in this bowl season. I think the only Big Ten team I did not pick on my list was Purdue. I think I picked Arizona. But all the other Big Ten teams I picked in the bowls, the reason I did was I just liked the matchups, and they came through with a 7-1 mark. And that's what you find, is that the Big Ten playing 9 conference games, there is a depth to it where it's a far greater gauntlet to go through in conference compared to conferences that have 8. Now, if you notice, I mean, who's been in the championship game the last couple of years? I mean, the last 3 years, let's see, you've had all 8 conference games. All of them played 8 conference games. Didn't have to run the gauntlet of a 9th conference game. I mean, look, you had 2 teams in Clemson and Alabama last night who in the next to last week of the regular season played. Clemson played the Citadel. Alabama played Mercer. And didn't have to play another conference game. I mean, Alabama has things pretty well set. They know they're going to play Auburn, LSU, Mississippi, Mississippi State, Kentucky. Every year, and they're one in the SEC who have a designated crossover game. They get Tennessee every year on the other side. Okay. And you wonder why they rarely, if ever, play Georgia. I mean, rare. They hardly ever play Georgia. It's something to be looked into, because the ACC and the Pac and the SEC are the only two that play 8 conference games. It's interesting how the ACC is going to 20 conference games in basketball next year, like the Big Ten, but they don't show any signs of going toward 9 conference games when it comes to the football side of it. We'll talk more about that. Ben Jones, Neil Coulong today. Hello, Sean.
Happy New Year, kind sir.
Happy New Year. Today's show brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. From College Park, Maryland, on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Sunbury Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC way. The choice is up to you. The other guy's way or the SMC way? The SMC way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years.
There are a lot of places to get insurance coverage, but only one place in the Susquehanna Valley ready to put 4 generations of experience to work for you. Hi, I'm Adam Purdy. At Purdy Insurance, we take the time to talk with you and find the right coverage for your needs. Everyone's situation is unique, so our approach is to customize coverage to best protect you. Whether it's home, auto, or business insurance solutions you need, call, email, or stop in to see how our commitment to personal service can help protect what matters to you.
Great to be with you. The Penn State fan base is going to be pretty thrilled with what they saw on Saturday. I mean, yeah, they won by 7, but you feel like it was, in so many ways, a dominating performance Bottom line is they won it. And it does a world of good heading into an off season for the winter conditioning program and so forth. When you win a game like that, it puts more juice into the winter program. The positive energy to get the most out of it is there. I think it, you know, that's one of the benefits. You know, you want to cap a season where the seniors go out in what they feel is the right way. You want the young players to feel like, okay, that gives us, quote, some juice going into the next year, which starts with the winter program. Miles Sanders was on the post game with us on Saturday and said, he says, get a week off and then back to the grind. His exact words, which means first day of class will be on Monday and it's back to the grind. He's going to be in the weight room. And you can tell it means a lot to him. And I know Jack and I then talked with Miles a bit at the hotel after the game. And he's excited about what's to come. Now, obviously, Saquon Barkley declared for the draft, which was not a surprise to anybody. And so the door is now open for Miles Sanders. And you get an opportunity maybe with Journey Brown to see what he can do. And obviously, Ricky Slade's a part of this mix. Saquon Barkley is a very, very special player. Very special. You don't get one like that that rolls through the door. There's a long time in between players like that, and he maximized what he had at Penn State, turning out to be a great running back, a great receiver, an excellent kick returner, a very good blocker, a team leader, a positive force, hard worker. He did all of that. Whatever success and whatever money he makes on the NFL level, he will earn every single dime, and I hope he does really, really well with it. He really is an outstanding young man. The flip side of this, I wanted to get into this quickly here before we get to the bottom of the hour. Our colleague Jeff Tarman will not be here in College Park tonight. His father, Jim, passed away a couple of nights ago. Jim Tarman was with Penn State Athletics from 1958 through his retirement in 1993. Including the last dozen years as athletic director. Jim Tarman was as fine a guy and as intelligent a guy as anyone I ever met in my life. He was on the board of trustees at Gettysburg. He's one of the guys that put together one of the original Heisman campaigns. They were on a trip out west, and they had to make a stop at Lambert Airport in St. Louis. And Richie Lucas, who was a versatile quarterback, DB, fabulous player. He got some playing cards and a hat, and he got Richie Lucas to hold up the playing cards, and you know, and they called him the Riverboat Gambler, Riverboat Richie. And it turned out he ended up finishing second in the Heisman that year to Billy Cannon of LSU. And through publicity, he and Fran Fischer and Joe Paterno went all over the state together, the three of them, to build alumni associations and also to build up the Penn State Radio Network, of which Jim was a prominent part as the color analyst with Fran in the 70s and into the early 80s, calling some of the great iconic games in Penn State history, and also co-hosting TV quarterbacks. And as an athletic director, facility upgrades, national championships, and then also guiding Penn State into the Big Ten. When he retired on December 31st, 1993, Penn State had just finished its first full Big Ten season. He guided that transition. He was one of the great guys to talk to. He had incredible stories, especially when it came to Beano Cook, above all. And he was just one of the real class acts and intelligent men that I was ever around in my lifetime that I learned a lot from. I feel like I have a better handle on the business of sports because of the generosity of the time that Jim Tarman gave me and all the times that we interviewed. I'll never forget in July of 1989, for some reason, I had him on my talk show, and I asked him about, I just blurted out something about the Big Ten, and I said, if I were to say Penn State in the Big Ten, would it be on the front burner, the back burner, would the burner be on? He'd say, back burner, he says, it probably on low. I said, so you're saying a burner is on? It was met with silence. That was the first hint I had that something was up. Jim Tarman, you'll be missed. And to Jeff Tarman, Emily, Jim and Liz, and especially his wife Louise, our deepest condolences.
From Learfield, this is Penn State Nittany Lion football.
Walking deep far side, he goes to Hamilton. Inside the 10, cuts to the 5. Touchdown, Penn State! It'll be Barkley, 10, 15, far side, 20, 25, 30, to the 40, 50. Goodbye, he is gone! Saquon Barkley, 92 yards! Pressure, hit at the 5 by Givens, and down he goes at the 5-yard line. Delivers near corner, Hamilton reaches up in the end zone. He's got a touchdown, Penn State, and the Nittany Lions answer right back. Barkley hurdles for a first down inside the 25-yard line. Now that is a first down with style. The Nittany Lion football team, Fiesta Bowl champions, as they beat Washington 35-28.
The Penn State Nittany Lions, Fiesta Bowl champions. When you think sports, think News Radio 1070, WKOK.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. And today's show brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. Purdy's have served this valley for decades, finding the best insurance at the right price for their customers. And the customer always comes first. Always. Sunbury Motors Studio, mobile today, College Park, Maryland, Penn State and Maryland tonight, 7 o'clock at the Xfinity Center, where we get free cable. All right. What? Okay, great to have you with us on the show today. In just a few moments, BenJonesStateCollege.com will join us. Time now for this day in sports history. In 1965, Broadway Joe Namath signed what was then the richest contract in the history of pro football, $400,000. Now, the St. Louis Cardinals actually drafted Joe Namath. And they went down to meet with Namath at his dorm in Tuscaloosa. And, of course, they made the usual NFL offer. Sonny Werblin, who understood showmanship, knew that they needed to get something big for New York and the AFL. So he sent his plane, and they flew Namath out to Beverly Hills, where they met, I think, at the Beverly Hills Hilton, I think. And when it was all said and done, he says, yeah. What do you think of $400,000? And that's not what the NFL was offering. Namath signed there. And Namath, look, he did everything the AFL could have asked. He was flamboyant. He was exciting. He was the first quarterback to throw for 4,000 yards. And remember, he did it in a 14-game season. Super Bowl III, of course, they won. But you know what always impressed me about Super Bowl III with Namath? Namath wanted to win so badly that he checked his ego in at the door completely to do it. Remember, as the quarterback in that era, he's calling his own plays. They're winning the game 16-7 in the fourth quarter. You know how many pass plays Namath called in the fourth quarter? None. Matt Snell and Emerson Boozer were running so well in that game, and he knew that controlling the clock was critical. Namath didn't pass once in the fourth quarter, didn't attempt one in the fourth quarter. 1972, Elvis Presley gave Muhammad Ali a $10,000 robe with People's Champion inscribed on it. Ali wore the robe on March 31st, 73. He lost to Ken Norton. That's when Norton broke his jaw in San Diego. And you know what impressed me so much about that with Ali? Is they think it happened in the first round, and he went all 10 rounds. That's tough. 1983, Ken Anderson of the Cincinnati Bengals completed 20 consecutive passes to set an NFL record. I think eventually, I think Montana passed that with 22. 1985, the Rebels of UNLV beat Utah State in three overtimes, 142-140, setting a new NCAA record for total points at a basketball game, 282. The game took over 3 hours to play. And in 2003, it was announced that Bill Parcells would be the next head coach of the Dallas Cowboys. He is the guy that eventually picked Tony Romo to be his quarterback. All right, there you go. That is this day in sports history. Let's bring in Ben Jones, statecollege.com. Ben, welcome. Great to have you with us. Penn State wins the Fiesta Bowl. What were your thoughts watching that game play out?
I think you saw a Penn State team that played, you know, in a way that we've seen them play when they're at their best offensively, a team that has a lot of weapons and is able to attack you down the field. Saquon Barkley had one of those moments that you go, this is why he's so good and why ultimately he's going to the NFL. Defensively, I think they made the stops that they needed to. And you know, I think, you know, for a last hurrah, if you will, for a lot of these guys, I think you saw the kind of game that reminded you of all the different sorts of games they've had over the past 2 years where they've been able to play well defensively. They've been able to make big plays offensively. And I think because of that, you know, Penn State was able to come out and close. And I think that's the biggest thing. I think the one thing that they hadn't been able to do in some of those close games against good teams is find a way to win at the end when they've had the lead or hang on to that lead. And they were able to do that. Their 6-minute and 9-second drive, I believe, was the second longest they had all year. And they needed it. You know, Tyler Davis misses that field goal at the end that would have sort of put a bow on that entire drive. But really, when they had the opportunity to win the game on their own terms, for all intents and purposes, they did that. So I think it was sort of the perfect send-off for these guys.
In fact, you look two of the last three drives that Penn State had in the game. They were both 13 plays and drained about 11 minutes off the clock where Washington was watching. How did you feel about this? This is the second time now we've seen Ricky Ronnie call a game as an offensive coordinator, and with Trace McSorley in the second half against Georgia with a lot of the same players we saw yesterday. They had them on the ropes at the end. What did you think about the job Ricky Ronnie did?
Yeah, I mean, I think the best thing you can say about the job that Ricky Ronnie did is that you kind of forgot that Ricky Ronnie was the guy calling the plays instead of Joe Moorhead. And obviously, you know, fans and I think everyone in general has been pretty positive about the job that Joe Moorhead did. And I think Ricky Ronnie called a good game. And I think to a certain extent, in some areas, he called a game that Penn State needed to have and maybe hadn't always got from Joe Moorhead. Obviously, I mean, I think you look at the 2 years that they had with Moorhead, I'm not going to sit here and nitpick and say that he didn't do a good job at all. But I think certainly, you know, Ricky Ronnie is a guy that had a lot to prove and really had little to lose, because I think, you know, if he doesn't call a great game or Penn State doesn't play great offensively, you can say Washington's a great team. They're a great defense. Ronnie really just needs a little bit more time to get comfortable with things. But I think he came in, really didn't lose a step, and I think he called about as good of a game as you could have expected, especially against an opponent, defensive front, and a defense in general as good as Washington. So really, you know, the fact that you don't really talk about Ricky Ronnie because the players made such great plays, I think is a testament to the plays that he called.
You mentioned the seniors playing in their final game, and so many of them had really some of their finest moments, like a Deshaun Hamilton, or Marcus Allen, Brandon Smith, people like that. What did, in the end, you've now watched them play through, what did the seniors mean to this program?
Oh, they meant everything. I think, you know, if you look at the class of guys like Christian Hackenberg and Adam Brenneman and those guys that sort of kept Penn State above water in that sanction era, I think these are the guys that kind of got them to the next level. And I think, you know, you look at the work that these guys put in, because it wasn't always easy. Mike Gesicki was not always Mike Gesicki. Deshaun Hamilton wasn't always Deshaun Hamilton the same way that we think about them now. And obviously, you got a guy like Saquon Barkley, that certainly helps. And Trace has been, you know, not better than I think we ever thought, but just a very steady hand all along the way. So I think, you know, even though Trace isn't a senior, you kind of lump him in that group of guys. I think these senior, all of these guys are, you know, they mean everything to this program, because Penn State went from being sort of that feel-good, make it through the sanctions, staying above water story to a team that's really as good as any in college football. And you watch those games last night, and, you know, you kind of feel like the playoff committee got it right. But, you know, you think at the same time that this Penn State team the past 2 years kind of had a puncher's chance against all these guys. And that has as much to do with these seniors as anybody else on the team.
Now let's take it to the next part, the players that will be back. When you watched some of the younger players play in the game on Saturday, Ben, what did it make you think about the future?
Yeah, I mean, I think we know how good Miles Sanders can be. We know that he's a guy that he's going to be serviceable and above and beyond that. I think he's going to suffer only from the fact that Saquon Barkley was so good that you're going to expect these sort of remarkable things out of the running back. But I think Miles Sanders, Ricky Slade coming in as a freshman, You know, those two guys are going to take care of that just fine. I think Juwan Johnson has been outstanding all year. And obviously, you know, he's been around for what feels like long enough that he's hardly a young guy anymore. But, you know, he's going to be a big part of that offense. And I think really, you know, you're going to see Penn State play a game that's a little bit more, you know, maybe a little pass heavy. So those guys are going to have to step up in terms of what guys like Juwan Johnson are going to do down the field. So I think, you know, offensively, those are the biggest things to watch. The biggest question marks defensively, you know, I don't know if we have answers to that in terms of defensive tackle and linebacker just yet, but certainly that's what the spring and summer are for. And we'll probably get a better sense, you know, the, once this blue-white game finally gets here. We're already talking about the blue-white game. There really is no offseason.
No, there really isn't. There'll be a late signing period as well that comes up with this, and we saw what Penn State did in the early signing period. Next Monday will be an all-SEC championship game, Georgia against Alabama. What were your thoughts on yesterday's games?
Yeah, I mean, you know, the Rose Bowl 2 years in a row have really given you sort of the games of the year. You know, Oklahoma, Baker Mayfield, that whole entire thing, watching them sort of punch each other in the face over and over again, score over and over again. You know, you kind of felt bad that one of those teams had to lose, and I think Alabama, Clemson, you know, you saw Alabama healthy finally again. You saw them maybe with a little bit of a chip on their shoulder because I think people, you know, even though they're Alabamas, maybe had some question marks about how good they were in terms of if they could be good enough to compete in the playoffs with their injuries that they had and how they had sort of been up and down all year. I think they answered that question, and you're going to get Kirk Saban. I think Nick Saban's undefeated against all of his former assistants, but I think, you know, if anybody is going to be able to have the horses and the sort of mental wherewithal to beat Saban, it's Kirby Smart, a guy that's been or had been with that program for forever. So I'm looking forward to it. And, you know, obviously, you know, for as good of a bowl season as the Big Ten had, the SEC's got two teams in the national title game. At the end of the day, that's all that really matters.
Obviously, matchups mean a lot. I know there are some years where the Big Ten did not have a great bowl record. My first thought was, you know, going into it, I didn't like a lot of the matchups. This was one where going into it, I liked a lot of the matchups that the Big Ten had. They ended up going 7-1. Jim Delaney said on this show just 2 weeks ago, he said, "Steve, got to go out and win some bowl games." Jim, you won seven of them. So what do you think about what the Big Ten was able to do in their matchups in the bowls?
Yeah, no, I mean, I thought, you know, end of the day, you play your bowl game, you got to win that bowl game, and when you don't, people look at that conference and make, you know, sort of broad statements about how you're doing. So the Big Ten's got the opportunity to go out and say, you know, we won a lot of, you know, marquee games. Penn State wins, Ohio State wins, and Ohio State and Penn State, both teams against, you know, good opponents. Ohio State probably dominated a little bit more than people expected. Wisconsin goes out and wins. You know, I think, you know, Purdue getting a winning season, going out and winning, I think really top to bottom, that's the thing, because people, you know, are going to give the SEC a lot of credit for having two teams in the title game. But if you're talking about conference depth, you know, the Big Ten went out and showed why it's as good as any, if not the best conference in college football right now in terms of top to bottom depth. Michigan, they've had a lot of questions they've got to figure out over the next few months. But I think ultimately if you're Jim Delaney and you go 7-1, you're going to take that every single offseason, and certainly the Big Ten showed up and showed out, and that's all anybody can ask for.
Well, sometimes with a deep conference, you're going to end up knocking each other off, and that's one of the issues that the Big Ten has to wonder here about knocking each other off, because if you have a top-heavy conference, that's not really going to happen. And that's actually, for the Big Ten, having quality depth is a plus, and there's also a minus to it.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Just a comparison. I know talking to people, you know, within Big Ten hockey, that's sort of the alternative concern to having, you know, six teams that are really good, seven teams. You know, just this whole, you know, everybody's really good. They beat each other up, and the hockey postseason is not that big to get a lot of larges. So you can go and say, yeah, we've got a really great conference, but honestly, you know, what they need is some guys at the bottom that are easy to get beat up on, and certainly, you know, no one wants to, you know, sort of advertise that in terms of football or hockey or any sport that you want teams that you want to be able to beat up on. But, you know, like you said, at the end of the day, when all these teams are beating each other up, it's good that your conference is good, but at the same time, you're kind of hurting your postseason chances in certain places where it really counts.
Ben, always a pleasure. Appreciate it.
Thanks for having me, Steve.
Ben Jones, StateCollege.com. Next half hour, Neil Coulong on the Steelers and the NFL playoffs.
Sunbury Motor Studios Mobile today in College Park as Penn State gets ready to take on Maryland tonight, resuming Big Ten play at 7 o'clock on beginning at 6:30. Today's show brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
DJ Khaled! Hey! Yeah. All I do is win, 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 no matter what. Got money on my mind, I can never get enough. And every time I step up in the building, everybody hands go up. And they stay there, and they say yeah, and they stay there.
Is that the Suits theme song after winning the bowl picks
it
again?
It is. Or? Yes. Yep, it is. That was the song that was blaring through his house last night after official word that he has won the bowl picks for the fourth consecutive year with an impressive 28-12. I had him where I wanted him yesterday, you know, but I went 0-3 going into the Rose Bowl. He went 3-0, and that was the clincher.
Yeah, he bragged to me yesterday in a text message.
Mm-hmm.
I ended it quickly.
I'm glad you squadooshed it.
Well, I told you how I ended it.
You did. He had nothing. He had no response.
He had no response.
He sure didn't. No.
Nope. It was a mic drop and exit. So, yeah. Yeah. His response was, I got nothing for that. So. Well, yesterday, the game between Oklahoma and Georgia was in terms of excitement, not in terms of athlete. We all know the NFL is a better athlete, and so everybody knows that. And they have a potential at a better level of play, obviously. But in terms of the excitement of it, there have been so many boring NFL games this year. Now, Baltimore-Cincinnati was not one of them. That was good. Pittsburgh and New England was memorable beyond words. And I think they've got a chance, by the way, to have a really good playoff. In fact, I think this playoff weekend is one of the better playoff weekends for an opening weekend that we've seen in a long time. Titans-Kansas City should be a pretty good game. Bills and Jags should be a pretty good game. Carolina and New Orleans should be a great game. That should be fabulous. And Atlanta and the Rams, that ought to be a really good game. I think you got like four really good games where sometimes on opening weekend you end up with that route, the matchup isn't quite right, whatever. I don't see that with this. So I think we've got a chance at some really good matchups on this opening weekend of the NFL playoffs.
Very impressive. You got eight new teams in this year compared to last year, and I think a lot of it had to do with a and then we've been mentioning it, since September, of so many star players going down throughout the season, like led to that.
Yeah, no question. And it's going to be below zero, so we're just going to sit in the house and just watch. I'm not going anywhere.
Kind of like what I did yesterday, all weekend.
I'm just going to sit there and just enjoy it. I've got a game Friday night. And I don't have another game till Tuesday. So this is one of those weekends that for me is clear, free and clear. So I'm just going to sit down and I'm going to watch and enjoy. It's snack time. Yeah, I guess at some point I have to get some semblance of real food, but we'll do that. We'll talk about the NFL playoffs with Neil Coulong in the next half hour. Donnie Collins later in the week. Rich Scarcella later in the week as well. Leading into the national championship game on Monday night, Georgia and Alabama. Georgia-Oklahoma game yesterday at the Rose Bowl had all the drama you could ask for. Idyllic setting, great game, exciting game, back and forth. Georgia won in double overtime. That was a lot of fun. Then Clemson and Alabama was a dud. Alabama's just too good. I think Clemson misses Deshaun Watson.
You're listening to News Radio 1070 WKOK Sunbury. You can hear us anywhere in the world with the Sunbury Broadcasting Corporation app.